question of the conquest of Yerushalayim in the Six Day War, Chavchet Iyar, the 28th day of Iyar, which some of us now say as Yom Yerushalayim. That was the day on which paratroopers broke into the Shar Arayot and conquered the old city. During the course of that morning, Rabinovich describes, it was about 10:15 or 10:20 a.m. in the morning, the first group of Israeli paratroopers were making their way hurriedly through the Simtaot, the alleyways of the old city, toward the Kotel and the Har HaBayit. But they were 19, 20-year-old boys who had never been in the old city, and they couldn't find their way to the Kotel. As they are hurrying through the Rova, they see in an alleyway a young, frightened man. They assure him that they're not going to harm him. All they say is, "We just want to know, tell us, how do we get to the Western Wall and to the Temple Mount?" And this frightened, trembling young man points the way for them, and the first group of Israeli paratroopers, the first group of Jewish soldiers in 2,000 years, hurry to the Kotel, make their way up to the Temple Mount. That famous cry, "Har HaBayit B'yadeinu Ani Chozer, Har HaBayit B'yadeinu," the Temple Mount is in our hands. I repeat, the Temple Mount is in our hands. And then the Israeli flag goes up on the Temple Mount, and this frightened young man is standing in the alleyway, and he's watching the flag, the Israeli flag, go up over the Temple Mount. Who was this young man? His name was Mahmud Daoud Schleifer. He had been born a New York Jew, Mordechai David Schleifer, Mark David. Had converted, become a Muslim, married a Jordanian girl, was working for a newspaper in the old city of Jerusalem at the time that the Six-Day War broke out. Rabinovich ends his description of this episode by saying, "What a strange witness to one of the greatest moments in Jewish history." Mark David Schleifer sees the Israeli flag going up over the Temple Mount, but he has absolutely no way of appreciating or understanding the extent of the majesty and the magnitude of that magnificent moment. He sees, but he doesn't see. He sees something happen, but unfortunately, torn away from his roots, he has absolutely no idea what's taking place. Confused mind watching the Israeli flag go up over the Temple Mount. Does this blindness affect only Mahmud Daoud Schleifer's? Or are many of us given to blindness every so often? Great events taking place before our very eyes, and we don't appreciate it for all sorts of different reasons. Another one of my favorite stories in this house, let me just tell it to you, and you'll see that I'm not saying it just to say, "Wow, how terrific I am," but this is something, when I think of it, I enjoy it. Sometimes justice is done in this world very quickly. I think it was 1978, I went with my wife to a Chinuch Atzmoy dinner in New York, the New York Hilton. I used to go every year to the dinners for Chinuch Atzmoy, the Aguda network of yeshivot throughout Eretz Yisrael. But that was one of the, every so often, a few times a year, we would make the big trek from West Hempstead, Long Island, out into the big city, glittering lights of Manhattan. And we come to the dinner, and I'm sitting by a table together with friends of mine from yeshiva, many of them I hadn't seen in years, back to Torah Das days. Most of them were in the world of business, and I'm the American rabbi. So at some point during the dinner, One of the fellows turns to me and he says, "No, Shalom, what was your sermon about yesterday?" This was a Sunday night, so you know, Sunday night dinner. "What was your sermon about yesterday?" So I looked at him. I said, "Well, obviously there could only be one subject to talk about. Yamit. That day, Yamit was going to be ground into the dust. A city was going to be Yamit when Sinai was returned to Egypt under the Camp David Accords. The price to be paid was the return of all of Sinai and a city called Yamit, a city with 350, 400 Jewish families and a yeshiva, and the Israeli army was going to plow under the city beneath the sands of Sinai. There were extremist groups who were planning to commit mass suicide rather than permit the Israeli government to do it." I mean, you don't remember all of this? Yamit. That day was the day on which Yamit was going to be plowed into the ground. So I told him that I just told him that that's what I spoke about. A terrible tragedy is about to befall us, a great price that we're going to have to pay for peace, to take a city, krach v'eretz Yisrael. The whole table smiled, and some of them laughed at me. That's the American New York Times rabbi gets his sermons out of the New York Times. I mean, like, you have to talk about Torah and mitzvahs. Some of them didn't even know that a city was going to be destroyed. They weren't even aware of the return of Yamit. And I thought I was living in a completely different world. The sum total was they all looked at me like, what do you expect of an American rabbi in a modern Orthodox congregation? I must tell you that I felt very bad. I really felt very bad. I don't think I felt so bad for myself as I felt bad here, a young man. I mean, they were as young as me. Young men, and Torah, B'nai Torah, Fumah, daven three times a day. Most probably were learning Daf Yomi, and they had no sense of what was taking place that day by Klal Yisrael. The way they looked at me was enough to... what do you expect, you know? Shalom Hashem, I hope from Vegem, and he was once a Ben Torah in the Yeshiva. Now he's an American rap. All right. The guest speaker at that dinner was to be Avram Shapira. Avram Shapira, who was the Carmel Carpet fame, who was then the Mankal HaMedina. And a few minutes later, they introduced Avram Shapira to speak. Guest from Eretz Yisrael is going to talk about Chinuch Atzmai. Avram Shapira gets up and he says, "I come today from Eretz Yisrael, and I know that I'm here to talk about Chinuch Atzmai and the great work that Chinuch Atzmai is doing. But how can a Jew speak about Chinuch Atzmai without talking first about Yamit?" Do I have to describe to you what took place at that table? I look up, and heads start going down one after another. He began to tell that as a shliach of the Ger Rebbe, he was granted permission to get through Israeli lines. Tzahal had put a wall around Yamit, and how in the name of the Ger Rebbe he spoke to the people of Yamit. He described the profound Jewish tragedy that was taking place. The shame and the embarrassment of all the people at my table was so evident. I didn't say a word after that. I didn't say, "I told you so," nothing was necessary. What was the problem? It was the Mark David Schleifer syndrome. It's possible to live in the midst of most historic times and not see nor be able to evaluate precisely what's taking place before your very eyes. My favorite newspaper is the Ateid Ne'eman. I get it every Friday, and I am usually aggravated until Shabbos comes. It's my planned aggravation for the week. A number of months ago, there was an editorial. I read the editorial, and I went out of my mind. I'm just going to give you the title of the editorial and the basic thrust of what's saying. Hapele Hagadol Shel Ha'ivaron. The great wonder of blindness. Blindness! Hama'oraot ha'madhimim she'ovrim ala olamenu b'tekufa ha'achrona. The shocking events that are taking place in our world in the last period of time. Higiyu l'siyam, have reached their peak, the apotheosis. I don't think they know a word like apotheosis. Have reached their peak. B'achlatashit kablashil shon b'mastva, a decision that was reached 2 days ago in Moscow, bitul ha-monopol shel ha-miflaga ha-communistit b'brit ha-moatzot. The Communist Party no longer has a monopoly in Russia. The entire world stands and wonders as we watch the tahapuchot v'hazazuim, all of the changes, apocalyptic changes that are taking place. She'ish lo tzafaltam. Nobody could have foreseen what was going to happen. Ish-ish mityaches lakach min nekudat mabato. Everybody looks at it from their own point of view. The first tugvot mikol hakivunim hiskimu, from all sides, whatever is taking place in Eastern Europe, they're talking about Eastern Europe, the fall of communism, the events of September, October, November, and December of last year. Everybody agrees that it was bilti tzafui lachalutin, completely, completely unpredictable. Anu, however, we Jews who believe in Hashgacha Pratis, ro'im b'chush, we see, we sense, ki yad Hashem astazot. This is the hand of God. The lev melachim v'sorim b'yad Hashem, in the heart of kings and officers and princes, in the hand of God. Everything is in the hand of God. Yad Hashem astazot. He says, as time will pass, there are those who are going to explain the events of Eastern Europe, either from economic, military, social, nationalistic, and all sorts of points of view. They will talk about a historical process, but we're not blind. We see every step of what's taking place in Eastern Europe. This is the hand of God. Never saw an editorial in Yateid Ne'eman that says about the establishment of this state and everything that's taking place over here, that this is the hand of God. They talk about the blindness of one who cannot see the hand of God in Moscow, Kiev, Belgrade. And what about seeing clearly, not being Mark David Schleifers, nor my friends at a Chinuch Atzmoi dinner, and be able to take a look at the events of the last generation and see them in the light of history, and to see that this is Yad Hashem. All right, I think that I've set the stage to talk about Hey Yer, Yom Ha'atzmaut. We forget so quickly, first of all, that nearly all of Klal Yisrael, 99% of Klal Yisrael, was in favor of the establishment of the State of Israel, and saw in the State of Israel the only Hatzolah, those were the words that we used, the only way to save the remnants of Klal Yisrael that were in Europe. Was it not a miracle when a band of broken, torn, and tattered Jews were able to declare war on the British Empire? Do you know that there was a time that the sun never set on the British Empire?
an empire that girdled the globe. And a band of Jews take on the superpower of the day. Not an act of Yad Hashem to have taken them on, and within a year and a half have, for all intents and purposes, brought England to its knees. That England must leave. That event in and of itself. We're talking about Rabin Biyad Miyatim. A few thousand armed Jews take on the British Empire. It's not Rabin Biyad Miyatim. I'll tell you, I'm happy to be precisely the age that I am, and I hope in Yetz Hashem, together with all of us, that we should be mad at Yamin Gesunte Hate. But I'm very happy to be the age that I am, because at the establishment of the State of Israel on Hei Iyar, May 14th, 1948, I was old enough to realize, to feel, and sense the greatness of the moment. I wasn't that old. I was a very precocious boy. I remember walking into shul in Williamsburg for mincha that Erev Shabbos at 206 Wilson Street. That's where we davened Yeshiva Torah Das in Williamsburg. I did not see just a shul full of 500-600 people. I saw 500-600 people, giants, standing tall. It was an unbelievable feeling. You walked through the shul, and it was just as we were arriving for mincha that word came over the radio that President Truman had recognized the State of Israel. You couldn't buy us for $1 million. Couldn't buy a Jew in the world for $1 million. It was the great thing that we all looked forward to. Klal Yisrael had finally achieved the unexpected, the unanticipated. Until the very last minute, one was not certain whether they would establish the State of Israel. America was telling them, no, don't do it. There were even Jewish leaders both here and in America were saying, no, no, don't do it. And then it was done, the die was cast, and Hei Iyar became what we will see. The significance of Hei Iyar has not ended, not at all. We're only at the beginning. The remark was made that for 7 hours on that day there was a battle whether to put the name of God into the Declaration of Independence. And finally, what was done was some kind of a parva terminology, Tzur Yisrael, which can mean the strength of Israel, the rock of Israel. It could be Tzahal, it could be God, it could be who knows what. The remark was made sort of as another way of trivializing Yom HaTzmaut. Take a look. I mean, this is going to be a chag, a yontif, a day on which they didn't even want to put in the name of God. I'm going to make only one comment here, and I will elaborate on it later, most probably not this week. Maybe two comments to be made about that. And that comment is made very often. Those chilaitim, those secular Zionists, couldn't even put in the name of God. I mean, we had it this week. When each one of the sarim, the religious sarim in the Memshala, went up and they took their oath of office, they said, Ani mitchayev be'ezrat Hashem. Somebody in the back benches over there said, listen, what do you mean be'ezrat Hashem? What right do they have to add this be'ezrat Hashem? This is not in the takanon. We have to bring it to the Sar HaMishpatim. Everybody started getting upset. And Dov Shilansky, the Yoshev Rosh HaKnesset, said, Ani Yehudi Ma'amin, Me Yalduti, Chunachti, Vurgalti, Loma, Bezrat Hashem, From my childhood, I've been saying Bezrat Hashem, the Yoshev Rosh HaKnesset. But the comment that I want to make is, I don't know whether 7 hours was spent on that historic Friday battling about whether they should put in the name of God or not put it into the Declaration of Independence. I don't think they had 7 hours, but all right, that's just a small point. This point is made time and time again by segments within the religious community, and they point the finger of indictment against these secular Jews who know not of God. I'm afraid to say the terrible mistake that is made is the fact that there was a struggle whether to put in the name of God into the Declaration of Independence is not an indictment of the secular Jew who doesn't know God. It's an indictment of the entire religious community that we weren't here to build Eretz Israel. If we would have been the builders, if we would have participated, if we would have taken part, if we would have come in our masses, there wouldn't have been a question that day whether to put in the name of God. This is not an indictment of the secular community. What does the Rebbe Shem want? The Rebbe Shem has kindness to somebody who was never raised with the name of God in his mouth, and he should walk around saying, Be'ez Hashem, you should understand what God is. That's how it is. We have to bring God to Eretz Israel. What all of those who use this as an indictment of the secular community don't realize that they are indicting themselves. As was said so often, it was said by the Knesset Gedola in 1937. Knesset Gedola, HaKadosh Yisrael, the Yoshev Rosh of the Knesset Gedola said, Asoneinu, the tragedy of Frum Megidin is we always stand on the sidelines when great things are being done. We come too late with too little. And that is our tragedy today. To what extent have we really worked for Aliyah in the last 40 years? Anybody who's going to try and tell us that in the 40, 50 years before the state we were also involved, the proof comes now. 40 years later, what have we done for Aliyah? We weren't here on HaER, and thank God there was an Ichemaya Levine, and Yibad Lachayim Azarach Var Haftig. There were two members of Aguda, and there were three of Mizrahi who fought a battle against all of the rest, at least to get in Tzur Yisrael. But it is the indictment of the Orthodox community that we did not participate, we didn't do our share. And if we didn't do our share, when it came finally to sit down at the table, we were not the Balabatim. And we're not yet the Balabatim. I spoke last year, right after Purim, I spoke in a shul in Borough Park. It was a shul of B'nai Torah, Kollel people, and there, into the jaws of the lion goes gold. What am I going to talk about? So I decided, you know what? We're going to make a Lebedik over here. I gave a real rah-rah-rah Eretz Yisrael Aliyah speech smack in the heart of Borough Park. The reactions and the responses were fascinating. Young men in their 30s, late 30s, came over to me and said, you know, I never in my life heard somebody speak about Eretz Yisrael that way. Well, the years I was in Yeshiva, I didn't hear one shmuz in which they talked about the greatness of Eretz Yisrael. We haven't heard it. Do you know what would have happened if for the last 42 years we would have pushed Aliyah in the Orthodox community? Do you know what our strength would be here today? We didn't do it before, and we haven't done it since. And what you see out over here, you know what you are? You're the drips of the trickle of Aliyah. We represent the trickle that Aliyah has become from the Western world. That's what we are. We represent them. Listen. Remember, Maxwell House was always good to the last drop, drip. But what would have happened if we would have pushed Aliyah for 42 years and we would have had another 100,000, another 200,000 Chumayyim in Eretz Yisrael? All right, I know, I can be facetious to say we'd have another two religious parties. Or, and we'll talk about that later, or we would have another 200,000 people strong. That it was all part of an aside. That if one wants to denigrate Yom HaTzmaut because of the supposed battle that took place for 7 hours, whether to put the name of God into Megillat HaTzmaut, I say that that's not an indictment of the secular community, that's an indictment of us. We weren't here, we didn't do it, we didn't write it, we didn't lay the groundwork, we're not the Balabatim. Thank God they got in the words Tzur Yisrael. Yes. The question that was just now asked, and I will deal with it at great length. I will deal with it at great length. The fact that the non-religious establishment attempted to block, you say, in 1942, or that the religious establishment, secular establishment attempted to block religious Jews from coming to the country. All right, that is an area that that must be discussed on its own. And now I think that at some point, I maybe now is the point. Yeah, Yaldei Tamon. You know what? Maybe now is the time for me to make an important disclaimer. I don't know why I decided to write this out. Let me make one thing clear. Nothing I will say should be misconstrued or distorted as to claim that I am in any way identified with secular Zionism. Of course, we are opposed to a shita that is a rejection of Torah and mitzvahs. We are opposed to that which is a denial of God and his role in Jewish history. Of course, the state is not yet what we had hoped and prayed for, but it is inexorably and inevitably getting there. I believe that a process was begun on Hay Iyar that will eventually lead to the creation of a nation, an Am Hashem. There will be ups and downs, highs and lows, moments at which it will seem as though the great national adventure has reached a dead end, but it will then rise from there and continue forward with greater strength and purpose. 2 years ago, do you know what was on the agenda of all Jewish organizations both here and in Chutz Eretz? You forgot. I know you forgot. Do you know what the big issue was? The problem of the Neshira of Soviet Jews. What to do with the Noshrim? A new word was created. Those who were stopping off in Vienna and not continuing on to Eretz Yisrael, or those who remained in Italy in camps. 2 years ago we were dealing with the problem of the dropouts. And now we're dealing, 2 years later, we're dealing with the problem of the Galei Aliyah, the waves of Aliyah that are coming here. Of course, if anybody would have wanted to assess the events 2 years ago, one would have said, Nebuch Lubitz happening to Klal Yisrael. There was also a remark that was made that it takes 100 years to assess historical events. It doesn't take 100 years to assess historical events. If one's eyes are open, we can assess them pretty quickly. We don't have 100 years. I don't think that on Hay Iyar 2048, all of a sudden, the religious community is going to jump up and say, 100 years has passed. Hey, that was a great day! Aleph, you know, it's like the fellow who doesn't get a joke, you know, 10 minutes later, out of the silence, he starts laughing. He finally got the joke. 100 years later, oh, we will finally have assessed it. Of course we're able to assess events. There are going to be downs and there are going to be highs. There will be moments at which it will seem as though this great process has stopped. But the great tragedy, and that I started talking about before, the great tragedy is the little or no aliyah from Western countries. And there, we are guilty. Whatever I'm saying, therefore, I'm not out to defend secular Zionists in their secularism. I came to studying in yeshiva here in 1955 and 56. I learned for about a year in Yeshivat Hebron and 3/4 of a year in Yeshivat Panevish. I was a member of Pe'ilim Yad La'achem at the time. I went through the Ma'abarot. I worked with Jews who were coming from all over the world. I saw secular Zionism at its ugliest. I was the first Fruma Jew to arrive in Dimona. I spent Shabbos HaGadol, 1956, in Dimona. And I had to fight in order to get those who are in charge of Dimona to permit the completion of the construction of the mikveh. I know it all. I know Yalde Teheran. I know Yalde Teiman. I know what took place In the 50s, there was a terrible struggle here between the religious and the non-religious. There was a non-religious element here that was strong and was powerful and was out to uproot Yiddishkeit completely. I'm aware of that. The points that I'm going to make are, number one, where were we and why did it happen? I'm not out to justify the ugliness of people who wanted to destroy Yiddishkeit. Far be it from me. I know the score. The question is, are we forever, until the grave, going to be blaming others and not once able to turn the finger of blame at ourselves? Would we have listened? Would we have heard? And we would have seen, it would not have been a secular state. It would not have been as secular a state. We would have been here, and we would have been building Eretz Yisrael, but we didn't do it. So we suffered. There's another point. You cannot fight in the 1990s the battle of the 50s. Great things happened during the course of the 50s. During the middle of that struggle, which seemed like it was going to turn into a near civil war, a Kulturkampf. You know what happened during that period of time? When I came to Eretz Yisrael, in 55, you could count the number of yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael on one hand. I think at the time there were 16 young men learning here who had come from the United States. In all of Eretz Yisrael, all of Eretz Yisrael. You have that one building in Har Nov today. The religious community in Eretz Yisrael was small, it was weak. During the course of the 50s and then during the course of the 60s, the growth was phenomenal. The growth of Torah that has taken place in this country in the last 30 years is unmatched and unparalleled at any other time in Jewish history. We have to know who we are standing up against, but it's a new world. It's a different world. We are participating now, belatedly, but we are participating in government. We're even fighting around for a kisei, or a sgan kisei, or a mankalut. We're becoming part of the establishment. So I will never justify anything that was in opposition to Torah. The only point that I'm going to make, and we will save that, the point that I'm going to make is rather than look for the averis by everybody else, how about looking at our own averis? It has become sort of commonplace now. We know everybody else's averis. We don't have any. We have to see, where did we go wrong? Why do we have to see where did we go wrong? Are we correcting it? I claim that aside from, and I said it last week, the great accomplishment of the 20th century was the rebirth of Torah following the Shoah. But we have not done enough for the rebuilding of the rebirth of Eretz Yisrael. We're still lagging behind. That will be discussed later. Back to Hey Er. So I was talking about how we move from one thing to the next. I was talking about when I was a precocious young boy on that Friday of Hey Er, a day that anybody who lived through that day will never forget it, never forget the moment. We knew what it meant. It was the most miraculous rise of Klal Yisrael mamish from the ashes, literally from the ashes of 3 years earlier. I mean, you just have to sit sometimes and think about the awesome transformation, something that has never happened in the history of any other people on the face of this earth, from the ashes of Auschwitz to become a nation, and yes, to build an army, to be able to repulse 7 invading nations. This is not Yad Hashem. Of course this is Yad Hashem. The only people in all of history to return to their own country after 2,000 years and to reestablish them. No other people did it. Rav Yankiv Kamenetzky, Zichrono Levracha, once said that the establishment of the State of Israel saved Emunah by Klal Yisrael. Saved faith in God. Following the Shoah, the remnants who came out of the camps had lost their faith. It took great strength to still believe in God. Yes, yes, the burning question was, where was God at Auschwitz? Jews came out having lost their faith. And the loss of faith was proceeding and accelerating at an impossible rate. Who knows how many Jews would have been lost? The response was the establishment of the State of Israel. Because anybody who asked the question, where was God in Auschwitz, could now at least be asked, but was God in Eretz Israel? At least a balance, a response, not an answer. At least the question of where was God in Auschwitz could not be asked with the same biting and sharp edge. Yankiv said, Emunah was saved. More than that, the entire mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael on Hey Er moved into a completely new category. There were halachic differences. Halachic changes came as a result of Hey Er. Overwhelming majority of poskim hold that there is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvah today like there was in all other times. You will hear there, of course, different opinions, but believe me, you are fulfilling a mitzvah. You're fulfilling a mitzvah since Hey Er 1948. The fulfillment of the mitzvah is completely different than before Hey Er. The Achronim say that the real mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is Ka'odom Ha'oseh B'toch Shalo, a man walking in his own land. As long as the land belonged to others, there's the Kedushas Haaretz, there's the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. It's a good thing, it's a mitzvah. But the fulfillment of the mitzvah, the way it should be fulfilled, the Yeshua Smalko and others say, Ka'odam Ha'osa Mitoh Shalom. Not a man who's living in somebody else's backyard, not the British Mandate or the Turkish Empire. Now, do you understand that during Bayit Sheni, most of the time that of Bayit Sheni, Jews were not living in their own land. When Ezra and Nehemiah returned to Eretz Yisrael, they returned by the good graces of the Persian Empire. And then when the Greek Empire took over from Persia, it was a state that was really a satellite of the Greek Empire. There was no independence until Hanukkah. That's 150 years at least from the time that Ezra and Nehemiah came back to Eretz Israel. And the Rambam, when he talks about the midst of Hanukkah, and he describes what took place on the 25th day of Kislev, he says in such festive manner, these are the words of the Rambam, V'chozro ha-malchus li-Yisrael yeter al-matayim shana, Malchut returned to Israel for more than 200 years. That's where the Rambam sees the greatness of Hanukkah. Malchus returned to Yisrael for 200 years. Up until that point, there was no independence. Eretz Yisrael didn't belong to Klal Yisrael. And at the fall of the empire of the Hashmonaim, and Rome took over, there was again no longer Adam Halse Mitoch Shalom. The only period of time in which Jews were able to fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael properly was during from the time of the Hashmonaim until the end of Malchus Hashmonaim, because only then were Jews acting on their own in their own land. The Rambam clearly sees that independence is the yesod of the mitzvah of Hanukkah, the fact that we achieved independence. Just as an aside, I don't know whose hands these tapes are going to get into, but the Art Scroll on Hanukkah, Art Scroll put out something on Hanukkah, Art Scroll puts out a lot of things on a lot of things. A lot of Art Scroll is very good, very good. Some of my best friends work for Art Scroll. My first visit to Eretz Yisrael in 1955, I came with Nelson Sherman, who is the one of the editors of Art Scroll. I remember having, after when I read the Hanukkah pamphlet of Art Scroll, so they go to great pains a number of times during the course of that pamphlet to make sure that this was no celebration of independence, military might, that we leave to the historians. And to the military men, this was a victory of the spirit. I don't disagree that it was a victory of the spirit. Of course it was a victory of the spirit. But there was going to be no spirituality in Eretz Yisrael as long as they were under the heel of Greece. They weren't going to reach a point at which there was a standoff. Okay, we have the Beis Hamikdash, you can have the Tachana Merkazit, and let's see, television, well, we don't want televisions anyway. Greece will have that, and we'll have radio. The only way that they were going to make certain that there was going to be a Torah community in Eretz Yisrael under Greece was the removal of Greece completely. And the Rambam saw that. So here, Art Scroll goes to great pains to make sure that, no, independence, God, that's a dirty word. No, not independence. Torah. I'm all for Torah too. I love Torah. I'm keeping up with the Daf Yomi. I love Torah. I'm trying to keep up. So I'm sitting with a friend of mine, and I tell her, I don't understand what Art Scroll is saying. But the Rambam says that the whole Nes of Hanukkah and its significance was Chazra Malchut li Yisrael Yeter al Matayim Shana, Malchut returned to Israel for more than 200 years. Without batting an eyelash, the fellow takes a look at me and he says, you know, it's a Shver Rambam. It's a difficult Rambam. So I said to him, what are you talking about? If you tell me a Shver Art Scroll, I understand, but don't tell me a Shvera Rambam. The Rambam sees Chazra HaMalchut LiYisrael Yeter Al Matayim Shana, Malchut returned to Yisrael for more than 200 years. That was the greatness of Hanukkah. Incidentally, we know when Yehoshua came into Eretz Israel. He crossed the Jordan on the 10th day of Nisan. The first Yontif in Eretz Israel was Pesach. And that Pesach really became the day Libya. That Pesach was the yontif of their arriving in Eretz Yisrael, because Pesach really was the fulfillment and the completion of a Pesach. We just learned that Moshe was the one who composed the first bracha of benching, Hazonet Hakol. When they came into Eretz Yisrael, Yehoshua made a takana. He created, he offered, he composed a new bracha. No delecha Hashem Elokeinu al shenchalta laviseinu eretz chemda tova rechava, the birchas haaretz. A bracha, you understand? Yehoshua made a bracha. Not a bracha to be said once a year, but a bracha to be said every time we bench, we say the bracha al haaretz. And then with the Gemara says that we say al bris choshech osamto v'sareinu bris mila, and then al toros choshelim adetono, and Rashi makes it very clear that Rashi and the Gemara make it clear that bris mila comes before Torah, because the promise to Avram that he will get Eretz Yisrael is because of bris mila. And then also Rashi says because of Torah mitzvahs, but because bris mila we got Eretz Yisrael. God, when I see who knows how many brisim are taking place today and every day in Eretz Yisrael of Jews coming from Russia, I think, no delecha Hashem elokeinu al shenchalta laviseinu eretz chemda tova rechava b'zchus bris choshech osamta b'vsareinu. And I remember when I came to Eretz Yisrael, the first meal we had here, I told my family when we came on Aliyah that when we bench and we say Noda Lecha, we should have in mind the bracha of Noda Lecha for the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. So we know the celebration of coming to Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yehoshua, it was Pesach. Do you know when Ezra came? And when they celebrated? Circus! It's described in at great length in Ezra and Nehemiah. The binyan of the first Bet HaMikdash, it's right there for all to read. The celebration took place from Yom Kippur through Sukkot in the times of Shlomo, and they ate that Yom Kippur. The one Yom Kippur in history that Klal Yisrael ate. It's right there in all clearly in Tanakh. The construction of the second Beit HaMikdash, not a great event. Of course it's a great event. Look into Chagai, Malachi, you know, you'll find out in Chagai that the foundations for the second Beit HaMikdash in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah were finished and completed on the 24th day of Kislev, and the next day they celebrated. That Chaf Hei Kislev that was going to become a great Yontif in the days of Hanukkah, that was the day on which they finished the foundations of the Beit HaMikdash. Incidentally, they completed all the work on the Mishkan in the Midbar, the 25th day of Kislev. Of course we know the dates. So first of all, yes?
But none of those celebrations were established as an ongoing thing.
We celebrate Pesach and Sukkot every year.
But not for that reason.
Ah, on the contrary. They made Pesach. What was the ultimate, what was Yitzias Mitzrayim for? Was Yitzias Mitzrayim so that we should continue floating around in the desert? What did God want? The whole purpose was, V'heveti etchem, I will bring you. The fulfillment and the completion of Pesach was Knisa La'aretz, entering Eretz Yisrael. That was the plan. It was all part of one plan. In other words, that original Pesach was a Pesach not only for Yitziat Mitzrayim, but that Pesach was also going to be the time at which Jews were going to come to Eretz Yisrael. The first thing they did was the Korban Pesach when they came into Eretz. That's the point that I'm making. So there were dramatic changes that took place on Hei Iyar. Number one, independence. The Rambam says that independence is a great miracle, enough to make a chag for. Chazra ha-malchut Yisrael yetra ha-matayim shana. Independence also means unlimited aliyah. Unlimited aliyah. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. The Shulchan Aruch said that when a person sees Hare Yehuda, you know, when you look out the window, the halacha once was, you see the Hare Yehuda, you're supposed to tear kriya. But the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that you tear kriya on Hare Yehuda only when it is biyad akum, when it is in the hands of non-Jews. If the
the cities and the mountains of Judea are in Jewish hands, there's no halacha of tearing your garment. So it's a din, it's right there in the Shulchan Aruch. The only thing that remains now is kriya for Kotel HaMa'aravi and Har Habayit. But the Shulchan Aruch says that a person, as he comes toward Yerushalayim and he sees the mountains of Judea and the cities of Yehuda, he's supposed to tear kriya. When he comes to Yerushalayim, he tears more. He comes to the Kotel, he tears more. Har Habayit. But that doesn't exist anymore, because the halacha is only when Eretz Yisrael is in the hands of Goyim do you tear for Harei Yehuda. Obviously, Milchemet HaShifruah was as well a Nes of Rabin Biyad Miyatim. It was Mimavet L'chaim, from death to life. First of all, the victory in the battle, and I think here a little history is important. By the second Yom HaAtzma'ut, there was no war anymore. By the time Hei Iyar 1949 came, war with all of the seven nations was over. The first armistice agreements were already signed on the island of Rhodes in January of 49. So that by the time the second Hei'iya rolled around, it was a time already that we had rested from our enemies. The statement was made, have you ever heard of celebrating a day on which a war begins? The real celebration, if Chas V'Shalom history would have been otherwise, and by history I mean Yad Hashem, I don't know what would have happened to Hei'iyar. But by the following Hei'iyar, there was peace in Eretz Yisrael. The statement about a war that continues until this very day, we'll deal with that later. Do we need more than the present Russian Aliyah to see that Jews, as a result of Hei Iyar is the day on which we became the Balabatim in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael became the property of Jewish people. And the most important and significant part of Hei Iyar was the fact that from that day on and further, any Jew in the world who wants to come to Eretz Yisrael can come. It means any Jew, where he may be in danger, had a place and has a place to go, and we see it happening every day here. I want to point out some very unusual statistics that have largely gone unnoticed. How many Jews were there living in Eretz Yisrael during the peak period of Jewish population in Bayit Sheni? During the second Bet HaMikdash period, what was the largest number of Jews living here? Huh? No. The estimates go from 1.5 million to, more realistically, is someplace in the neighborhood of 2,350,000 Jews who lived in Eretz Yisrael at the peak period of Jewish population in Bayit Sheni. There are some who go as far as to say that there were 2.5 million Jews living here. It may have taken Eretz Yisrael in the time of Bayit Sheni over 400 years to reach 2.5 million Jews in Eretz Yisrael. It took under 20 years for 2.5 million Jews to be living in Eretz Yisrael in our day. What took 400 years in the time of Bayit Sheni. In 20 years after the establishment of the state, there were more Jews living here than in the time of Bayit Sheni. The day went unnoticed. Now what I'm going to say now, I want you to listen very, very carefully. I want you to remember that you heard it here. You heard it here. Decade. I believe it's going to be within the next decade. Toward the end of the decade, and don't keep me to it, maybe a few years earlier, a few years later, but be'erach within the next decade, a Jew is going to step off a plane onto the tarmac of Ben Gurion Airport, and a change of such dramatic proportions is going to take place. If it's up to me, it will not go unnoticed.
If it will be up to me, if there's anything I can do about it, I will make sure that that moment is going to be a moment forever to be inscribed in Jewish history. Because at that moment, what's going to happen? A Jew is going to walk off a plane, and at that moment, the Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael is going to become the largest Jewish community in the world. 42 years ago, there may have been someplace around 500,000 Jews in Eretz Yisrael. The number of Jewish communities outside Eretz Yisrael that were larger in number were many, many. In the course of these past 42 years, what's happened is Eretz Yisrael that may have been 10th or 15th in size 42 years ago is now number 2 in the world. There's the American Jewish community, and there's Eretz Yisrael. Unfortunately, the American Jewish community is going down. Unfortunately, the tragedy of American Jewry. Intermarriage, assimilation. They don't even talk about 6 million anymore. They're saying now 5,800,000 Jews in America, and going down, tragically going down, not going up. I remember my father, Olav Shalom, every few years, he'd be sitting at the table and he'd say to us, "Little Yidden sind founded in America. How many Jews are in America?" He'd answer, 6 million. He says, "I don't understand. The 1930s, I asked the question, and they told me there were 6 million Jews in America. In the 40s, I asked the question again, and still 6 million. In the 50s, in the 60s, the last time he asked me the question was in the 70s. What happened?" They'll never talk to listen. Intermarriage, assimilation, we're losing shticker in America. They don't even talk about 6 million anymore. It's about 5,800,000. Russia's emptying out of its Jews, pouring into Eretz Yisrael. At some moment during the course of the next 10 years, that Jew is going to step off a plane, and the largest Jewish community in the world is going to be right here in Eretz Yisrael. And when that Jew steps off that plane, that's going to be because of only one reason. Hey, you're 1948. When Eretz Yisrael became the property of Klal Yisrael, and it was made clear to the whole world, unlimited immigration. Any Jew in the world who wants to come can come. I'm going to make one further prediction. And remember again, you heard it here. And this is going to be a change of such dramatic proportions that one will simply have to stand up and take notice. So let's take notice of it now. In the decade following that, any time between the year 2000 and 2020, we should all gesund to hate, be here to see it. A Jew again is going to step off a plane. And when he steps off that plane, there's going to be a change of such cataclysmic halachic proportions. It's going to blow our minds. At that point, there are going to be more Jews in Eretz Yisrael than the sum total of Jews in the rest of the world. If there are going to be 12,000,001 Jews in the world, there will be 6,000,001 in Eretz Yisrael, and the rest in Chutz Laaretz. Do you know what that means? First of all, you know what that means? That something has taken place that did not happen since the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. That the majority of Jews in the world are living in Eretz Yisrael. It didn't happen bizman bayit sheni. And for that reason, trumot u'masrot during the entire period of bayit sheni, the mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz were only midrabanan. Why? Because for mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz to be a chiyuv min ha-Torah, you need biat kulchem, the arrival of all Jews in Eretz Yisrael, and the achronim say rov is kakol, the majority of Jews in Eretz Yisrael is kakol, the moment that Jew steps off the plane, trumot u'masrot and yovel and shmita becomes min ha-Torah.
We now move, at that moment we move back to the days, or forward to the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. Will anybody be able to deny that? It's a halacha. It's a halacha. And that dramatic change in halacha is going to take place as the result of Hei Iyar. What didn't take place in the time of Bayit Sheni, we can with absolute certainty look forward to its happening. Maybe we'll be off by a few years, maybe it'll happen a few years earlier, a few years later, but that's where we're going to. What I'm really saying is that anybody who isn't Mark David Schleifer should see that the kibbutz Goliath in our days is unparalleled in all of Jewish history. If I would have the time, and maybe at another time, I would quote all of the psukim, or some of the psukim, that were quoted by our Prime Minister, Yitzhak Shamir, the Prime Minister of the secular state, who quoted the psukim in Zechariah about Jews coming back to Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim expanding. Do you know that Yerushalayim is bigger now than it ever was in all of its history? Yerushalayim, Har Nof, is Yad Hashem. There are awesome things that are taking place over here. There's a kibbutz Golios of unparalleled proportions, and it's all taking place before our very eyes. Either we see it, or God forbid, we don't see it. I'm afraid that I have so much more to say. I think that we're just going to stop on that note here, and in Yetz Hashem, we're going to have to go into extra innings.